I'll open the Education and General Government Committee. Welcome. And I will begin with opening a hearing on House Bill 2507. Dana?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2507 specifies requirements for modified high school diplomas and extended high school diplomas. It declares an emergency. It would take effect July 1st, 2009. We do have two sets of amendments before us. Shall I address both, or do you want to kind of do it as we get to this more specific folks testifying on the amendments? Or?
Yeah, why don't we have sponsors up first and talk about the bill and the amendments. Representative Gelser is here, and I know Senator Walker is here. Did you want to come up afterward? Or?
Some materials for you. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Thank you for taking time today to hear House Bill 2507A. And with your permission, I'd like to tell you a little bit about why this bill is even here in the first place. It stretches back to 2007 and some work that we did together, some of you were on the Education Committee then, to create a modified diploma in the state of Oregon. The situation in 2007 was this. We had no statewide standards at all for a modified diploma. Every school district was free to set its own requirements for a modified diploma. Some school districts were offering them. Some school districts were not. Some school districts may have had some standards for what a modified diploma were. Others did not. We actually had testimony in 2007 from a mother who called to complain about the alternative certificate that her student with a severe disability had received, and she received back in the mail a letter with a certificate that said modified diploma. So the requirement for her child to get a modified diploma was that the parent complained, and then she received this modified diploma. So what we had wanted to do, and what the intent of that bill had been, was to create standards for a modified diploma that would raise the bar of achievement and expectation for students with the most severe learning challenges. This was a very hard bill to write because the students that we're really talking about and that I was talking about when I brought this bill in 2007 were students with significant developmental disabilities. These are students who, at the fifth grade or sixth grade, get shoved into a vocational tract for their learning and are no longer offered academic courses. And I became interested in this as a parent myself when my son made the transition to middle school and when I went to talk to the principal about how we would accommodate for him in social studies or in science or in literature, and I learned that his school, his expected progress from there was that he would sweep the floors in the hallway, he would do the laundry for the lost and found, after lunch he would wipe down the tables, and this was in the Corvallis School District just a couple of years ago, every day would put on gloves and an apron and dig through garbage cans to find recyclables so that he could learn how to earn money. I complained about this and asked instead what the standards were for a modified diploma, that it was my job to teach Sam how to wash tables, and I needed the school to help me learn about his world and learn science and social studies. They couldn't produce for me what the requirements were for a modified diploma, started investigating and learned that we had no statewide standards for a modified diploma. So that's the type of circumstance that we were attempting to get at, but we couldn't use the words disability in the law. So we left it up to rule. We passed the bill. It went to the Department of Ed, at which point the new standard diploma requirements had gone into effect. And for some students with severe learning disabilities who have a significant disability but a different kind than the students that we were talking about, the new high school graduation requirements provided some significant challenges. And the concern that many of these stakeholders at the Department of Ed had were that these students would then not be motivated to stay in school at all and that they were going to drop out. And as a result, after much, and I think Morgan can tell you, very vocal, protracted protest from me, along with the statement that I would bring back another bill, the board adopted rules that required a 24-credit modified certified diploma, which is really important if you're talking about students who have a specific learning disability or a lesser disability, but for a kid with a significant disability, 24 credits is overwhelming and it's never going to happen. So those kids are not going to start. So what you have before you, you have the rule for what the modified diploma is as adopted by the State Board of Ed. I do think that the modified diploma they developed does serve a good purpose. The rule, and we can talk about that a little bit later, I think you're going to hear some concerns about it. The thing that's important to remember is that not a single modified diploma has been awarded yet under this bill. Under that bill, this school year is the first school year that this went into effect. So when you read that article in the Oregonian a couple of weeks ago, none of those were modified diplomas that were developed under this bill. This bill fixes that problem by creating statewide standards. And I think you may hear from some folks who have not been treated well by their districts and whose students have gotten modified diplomas, but those are different modified diplomas. Those modified diplomas would no longer exist because we've now created a single statewide standard for a modified diploma. The bill that we brought back this session builds onto that, and we're making another go at trying to raise the bar of achievement for these significantly challenged kids. And so what you see in the language in the dash 5, which is really similar to the original bill, there was a formatting error in the drafting, it creates what we're calling an extended diploma. This extended diploma would be a 12-credit diploma. The diploma that they would receive would require 2 credits of math, 2 credits of English, 2 credits of science, 3 credits of history, geography, economics, or civics, a credit of health, a credit of physical education, and a credit in art or a second language. And only 6 of those 12 credits could be earned in a self-contained classroom. So it would say these students have to get out and have access and the opportunity to experience the academic curriculum in their schools. Now you might look at this and say, wow, 12 credits, that's pretty low. This is a pretty low standard. But if you continue reading and you get down on page 4, starting on line 11, not only to be eligible for an extended diploma, do you have to have this documented history of an inability to maintain grade level achievement due to a significant learning and instructional barrier, you also have to have begun participating in alternate assessments in at least 2 assessment areas no later than the 6th grade and lasting for 2 or more assessment cycles. And one of the handouts that you have at your place talks about what these alternate assessments are. Under the No Child Left Behind Act, a school district is really limited to only about 1% of their student population participating in these alternate assessments. Otherwise, it doesn't count towards participation for their AYP. But this is who these students are. These are students that perform well below grade level, significantly below grade level in reading, have academic difficulties that are generalized to all subject areas and are significant. So you're not talking about a kid with a reading disability or a disability in math or a student with dyslexia and who benefits from individualized supports. It's a student whose instruction is primarily a specialized curriculum and that when they're receiving the general curriculum, it has to be significantly reduced in breadth, depth, and complexity. A great example of that, a student with a severe cognitive disability can learn the principles of the westward expansion. They may not understand all of the dates and all of the players, but they can understand the idea that you begin in the east and you move to the west. They can understand that people moved in wagon trains. They can understand that it was very dangerous and that people died and that they had to give up things that they had. So their report might look very different. They're getting the general idea rather than the specifics. And we want these students to have access to these opportunities. And I can give you 2 examples of why we want these students to have these opportunities. The first came from Tom Hare, who used to be the director for the National Special Education Office of Special Education. And I attended a talk by him once. My son was probably 2 or 3 at the time. He had a child in his life who had cerebral palsy, severely disabled, used an augmentative communication device to speak because he was nonverbal, and he was an African-American child. child. Everyone understood him to have a significant disability. His parents, with the help of Tom Hare, worked very hard to keep him included in school and advocated to have him have access to academic instruction despite his severe disability. When he was a teenager, he went to the East Coast to visit Mr. Hare, and they were driving, and they crossed the border into Virginia. And on his assistive communication device, he typed out, "I don't want to go to Virginia." And they said, "Why?" And he said, "Because it's a slave state, and I'm black, and that's not a good idea." Now, clearly, there was a cognitive, you know, misunderstanding of history, that we were in a different time in the 20th century than when slavery had taken place. But because this student had had access to this type of curriculum, he understood the history of his country, he understood the social history of his country, and he understood his racial and ethnic history within the country. This is something that every student deserves access to. The other example I would give is my own son, who even this year, whom kind of really hardcore inclusion has to have access to academic opportunities, was worried in his physical science class that maybe this was a little too hard. He talked to me one day, brought home the penny that they turned from copper into the silver color, and I asked him how he did that. I didn't expect he would be able to tell me, but he said when it gets really hot, the atoms start to move around really, really, really fast. And then things change color. He would never have been exposed to that. He can talk to me about the life cycle of salmon. He can tell me about all sorts of things because we said no, that he wasn't going to spend his days clearing cafeteria tables. He was going to be learning like other students because that's what our schools are for. That's what this bill is about. It requires that every student have access to these opportunities, that they have access to these classes, and for these kids in this extended diploma, you're looking at going from 0 credits to 12 credits. The worst thing that we can ever do to a child is to offer them expectations that are too low. This is all about raising expectations. It's really important that we pass this bill. I hope that you will. And one other thing that I wanted to mention, I did these Dash 5 amendments, based on some of the concerns that I'd heard, we added some language that was not in the original bill on the first page, and the language that I had asked for was language that would say you can't deny a student the opportunity to pursue a standard diploma just because they meet the requirements or the eligibility requirements for these other two diplomas. And you'll see that on lines 15 through 20. School district or public charter school may not deny a student who has the documented history described in subsection 7B or 8B and C of the section the opportunity to pursue a diploma with more stringent requirements than a modified diploma or an extended diploma for the sole reason that the student has the documented history. The other thing that the bill does later on is it restates basically the federal special education law, saying that literacy instruction must be provided until graduation, and it states that students shall have access to the appropriate resources to achieve a high school diploma, a modified diploma, an extended diploma, or an alternative certificate at each high school in the school district or at a public charter school. So what this is saying is you can't tell students, no, we only modify at the school, at the high school across the street. You attend this school, so you can't go to the history class. It's all about raising expectations, and I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you. Questions? Senator Bonamici.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Gelser, for being here. You said at the beginning of your testimony that when the original bill was drafted, you said you couldn't use the word disability. Could you explain why?
Chair Haas, Senator Bonamici, you can't create a special you can't create a special education diploma, partly because of student privacy rights, but also you get into that to kind of the equal protection idea. Every student has access to continue to pursue a standard diploma. And it's federal law. In terms of the language around limiting it to the assessments, which basically does become a description, I cannot think of a student that would not have a cognitive disability that would be eligible for this extended diploma. But I did talk with the Federal Office of Special Education, and they said that this language was permissible. And I did also seek an opinion from the Office of Legislative Counsel. I just got the letter back this afternoon, double-checking that this language doesn't kind of violate the 14th Amendment. Amendment and the Equal Protection Clause, and they said that it does not.
Thank you, Representative.
Further questions? Just to refresh us, the amendment, I guess the Dash 5s, What is the nuance that is changed then from the original bill?
So let me kind of go through the bill. The first nuance is on the first page, the language clarifying that you can never deny a student a diploma with more stringent requirements just because they meet the eligibility requirements for a diploma with a less stringent requirement. The primary error in the original bill was that the requirements in terms of the credits for the extended diploma got plunked down in the modified diploma section instead of those should have run with the extended diploma. This is not changing the modified diploma that has not yet had the opportunity to work yet. This is the first year that can be offered under the bill we passed in 2007. The only change to that is the language on the first page, which clarifies in statute you cannot deny a student that meets those eligibility requirements access to a standard high school diploma.
Bruce?
Okay, I guess I'm still slightly confused. We have now have a modified diploma, which hasn't really been test-driven yet. Now we're adding a third diploma. That confuses me.
Thank you, Senator Hash, Senator Cruz. Thank you for that question. This would create basically four leaving options for school, a standard diploma, a modified diploma, an extended diploma, and then this alternative certificate. The reason that I've brought this bill back, when we had this discussion back in 2007, and I'm really grateful you asked a lot of hard questions then, and Senator Walker worked really hard with this bill to try to narrow the language to make very clear to the Department of Education what the legislative intent of this bill was. Despite all of those things, the department, through their rulemaking, use this modified diploma to create something totally different. So what got created in the rule that you see here, I don't think it's a bad thing, but it is clearly outside of the intent of the bill that we passed in 2007. And unfortunately, for the students that we were trying to help with that, they would never be able to achieve what is here. Nothing. And because we took away the opportunity for local school districts to define their own modified diplomas, the only thing now that these students with significant challenges could get is an alternative certificate, so they now have no carrot at all to be enrolled in academic classes.
So why didn't we just make what we attempted to do last time right? I mean, I'm wondering, we're setting up all these different things out there, which ultimately I think would be confusing as to what we got. I mean, we knew what we were after last session. Why don't we just drive the modified diploma to what it was supposed to be?
Chair Haas, Senator Cruz, I think that my staff and Representative Buckley and Morgan and others would describe to you the many, many hours, not all of which I was in very good cheer or very polite. I made extraordinary efforts to try to drive the rule to be what we had intended when we passed. I was unsuccessful at doing that. I protested all the way up to the state board at the time when they went to adopt the rules. I found that it seemed impossible to stop that. If I had to choose between the two, do you have the modified diploma or do you have the extended diploma? I prefer the extended diploma, and to not have a modified diploma and have somebody else come back later. That said, I don't think this is a bad thing. I think there are students that this serves. It's always hard to go back and take something away that has been given, and I think you'd have a lot of very angry families around the state if you took this modified diploma away. My argument is we worked really hard last session to serve a population of kids who are left behind by what the Department of Ed adopted. I want to fix that.
Okay, and without a change this year, that new change will be test driven when?
And Senator Haas, Senator Cruz, and I'm waiting to get back a letter from the Department of Education describing this to me, but you'll note in the rule, it says the requirements of this rule for a modified diploma apply to all students who enter the ninth grade on or after July 1st of 2009, and then it goes on to say that if a student has enrolled before that, each local school district can decide whether or not they have to meet the requirements. That is actually not not compliant with what we passed in the law last time that said that those modified diplomas would first be offered in the 2007 or in the 2008-2009 school year. You see that on page 6, lines 2 through 4. School districts and public charter schools shall make modified diplomas and alternative certificates as required by that law, first available to students during the 2008-2009 school year. I'm waiting to hear back from the Department of Ed why their rule says it's only available to students who become freshmen next school year, which is a school year after the law says they have to be available. I believe the law clearly says this is the year they should be offering those diplomas, and this is the year they should stop allowing school districts to kind of willy-nilly pick what their modified diploma requirements are. And that's why I think the modified diploma part of this is important. I don't think we want each local school district to decide what the requirements are for a modified diploma. I think that there is great value in having a statewide standard and knowing what that means. It provides an important level of accountability to the school districts.
All right. So, but eventually when that 2007 statute goes into effect,
mm-hmm.
What would happen if we weren't to pass this bill?
Senator Hash, if we were not to pass this bill, you would have students with less significant disabilities who would be able to pursue a 24-credit modified diploma, which is compared to a 24-credit standard diploma. The students that we were trying to help, the students who are currently making 0 credits, would have nothing that they could work towards for recognition of striving to make progress, and we would leave them behind.
Gotcha. Okay.
And students who are in middle school now, today, would have no opportunity to leave school with any type of a diploma.
Okay. Okay. Next up, Senator Walker. Dana, while she comes up, do you want to familiarize us with the correspondence from the Legislative Council?
I wonder if Representative Elster might want to do that at the close. Didn't that also come through your, not the one today, but the one from last week, Representative, sorry. Let's see, what did this one come from?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Vicki Walker, District 7, and I'm not going to stay long because I'm incredibly late for committee. I'm handing you, I only had an opportunity to print the opinion that I just received while I was sitting there. I asked Legislative Council for an opinion on whether this bill violates NCLB, No Child Left Behind. You had asked for an opinion on the 14th Amendment. I've just kind of cursory reviewed it at the moment. So I think there's going to be more conversation. As you know, last session we did have this bill in committee. I believe it was House Bill 2848. We had a lot of conversation about this bill. I had a lot of angst, and I still have a lot of angst. And I wanted to introduce Ms. Reed, my constituent who has 2 learning disabled children and who has a lot of angst as well. Because one of the things that I'm concerned about, and I think that Ms. Reed can share with you, is that if you offer this modified diploma, it sort of gives school districts a license not to provide the necessary tools and resources to these children to achieve. So they'll just, they'll teach them to just that bar and not allow them to go any further. I've also encountered some problems with this modified diploma in that the students are not eligible for financial aid. They're not eligible to apply for financial aid as they are with a regular diploma if they were to go on into higher education. Whether that's changed now, I don't know, but not only Ms. Reed brought that to my attention, but I've had other constituents raise that with me. So I'm going to leave it in your lap to try to get a grip on what the controversy is here. Ms. Reed's very articulate and is willing to walk you through her concerns, and then I suspect that we'll probably have some conversations a bit later when you've had more time to review the suggested changes. We do have a -4 amendment. It was quickly prepared. Ms. Hannah Lai will tell you that. So Ms. Reed has just not even, she was given them this afternoon. So, Legislative Council does their best, but I think I'm going to have to review those a little bit more with Ms. Reed and the committee. So if you don't need me any further, I'll scoot off to committee.
Questions for Senator Walker? Okay, thank you.
All right, thank you.
Thank
Chair Hass, members of the committee, thank you so much for your time today and for your attention on this issue. And I'm more articulate in writing, so here we go with the public speaking part of it. As Senator Walker says, I'm here out of concern for kids with learning disabilities and kids with learning disabilities who don't get the type of support services they need at an adequate, thorough, or timely manner. And unfortunately, it's been my 10-year history in trying to get special education services for my kids that tells me that the reality is that the level of services assumed under this legislation and the prior existing law does not exist in practice. And I don't believe that it is necessarily deliberate on the part of the public schools, but my experience in working with these teachers, they are just flat at capacity. Anytime I try to contact them about an issue, it is very hard for them to get back to me and to respond. They're very busy. So given that that is the reality that many of us face in this state, unfortunately, over the last 10 years, there is not one year that has gone by when there hasn't been a significant violation of IDEA. So that just tells me we cannot legislate based on the assumption that these kids are getting services. So what's missing from my perspective in this bill is a very clear mandate on the part of the schools to demonstrate irrefutably that they have provided the necessary and appropriate level of services across all areas of suspected disability, because some of these kids, like my own, have fairly complex disabilities and they're invisible. So to look at them, you don't think anything is wrong, but some of the behaviors suggest, yeah, something's not clicking here. So, again, what I believe is missing is the mandate for the schools to first demonstrate that the interventions, the modifications and accommodations that they have provided are fully adequate and based on best practices, because here's another reality. An IEP that I get for my child in one district is not transferable to another school district. It's only good long enough for the new district to come up with what they believe the issues are and how they propose to manage those. So we don't have even services throughout this state. And yes, thank you, Chair Hass. Through your legislative aid, I did pursue questions about 14th Amendment right violations, and I appreciate that very much. And I do agree with what the Legislative Council said in terms of the problem comes in areas of implementation of the law. Absolutely, that's what's happening here. And I also, and apparently Senator Walker also looked at No Child Left Behind, because my information in talking to a special education attorney out of Boston, Kathleen Boundy, she is our nation's top special education attorney. And I contacted her because as I sat and thought about this, I thought, how can this not be a violation of these kids' constitutional rights? And she said that she agreed with me that, yes, it is indeed a violation. And the thing I want to bring to your attention here is that, you know, while it is not intended, that is not the intent of this legislation, and I absolutely support Representative Gelser in her desire to provide as many services as possible to all children, there is an unintended consequence here, and it has an interesting twist, because to the degree that you award a modified diploma to a child who is otherwise qualified under the law to be taught to the same standards, and yet they've struggled and maybe haven't gotten the services they need, you've done me, parent, a favor by awarding them this modified diploma at significantly less requirements, 12 credits rather than 24. Suddenly you have documented that my child has not received that free and appropriate public education. And I thought all along it wasn't happening, but as soon as we shift into these reduced standards, there's the proof right there. Yes, my child is not receiving that free and appropriate public education, which has an enormous fiscal impact on our school districts because these kids are basically, and families are set up to be able to contest educational malpractice. And in looking at the material Kathleen Boundy sent me, she had submitted a memorandum to the Obama Education Transition Team. And although she's talking about providing modified or lower standards for assessing kids, she felt that this was basically, these are the issues we're dealing with here. And if you'll allow me, I will quote her. She says, setting modified or lower standards for assessing certain students with disabilities inevitably means that most of those students will not be taught those skills and bodies of knowledge expected for all students at the levels expected for all students, and it effectively puts a ceiling on their education because these things are incorporated in their IEPs and overall instruction. She says this is clearly a violation of Section 504, at the least in those cases where there is not irrefutable evidence that giving any such student the same access to the same level is pointless. Then in an article that she wrote for Perspectives on Language and Literacy last fall, she says, to the extent that these individual students can demonstrate that their education and future livelihood have been harmed as a result of these practices, they have a basis for exploring the viability of claims of discrimination. So there you go. And really the problem to me here is that the classification for this modified diploma is unnecessarily overly inclusive of otherwise qualified kids who just don't get the support they need in order to demonstrate mastery of academic content and criteria. And it's something Kathleen Boundy also says, that as a civil rights issue, students with disabilities must be protected from being subject to overbroad criteria without adequate justification, which on their face sweep in more students than fit the underlying standard. So, again, I think that what we need to do, if we are to keep this modified diploma, I think there has to be language in the bill that says that the districts have demonstrated irrefutably that they provided every possible opportunity for these students to earn a regular diploma. Because, and I am confused on this, and I haven't had a chance to read the letter from Legislative Council, but to my thinking, this is a violation of No Child Left Behind, because it says that schools are supposed to develop academic content standards that are the same for all students. So I'm really confused about
We just got a letter from the Legislative Council today. We're distributing right now. It's not a violation.
Okay. And I don't understand why, but I look forward to reading the letter. Thank you, Chair Hass.
I'm here in a second.
Finally, basically where I disagree with Representative Gelser is how we give kids every opportunity to learn to their capability. And I would like to see a shift away from a model that differentiates based on broad categories of disability to one that teaches to the same standards as I believe is required by No Child Left Behind, and only adjusts requirements based on specific disabilities for each individual child, and that can be identified through the IEP process. And then I would also ask that if we are to have the modified diploma, I ask that if it can be demonstrated that services were not provided in adequate and timely manner, that these kids be allowed the regular diploma out of default, because it's not their fault that they weren't given the chance that they needed to demonstrate mastery. I had asked in my amendments, again, as Senator Walker said, that it was done quickly. It was done quickly. I had asked that kids that, because of their disability, can't achieve, say, math or whatever, that they be given a diploma anyway, because I thought Section 504 said you can't discriminate based on disability. But I looked at it some more, and it says otherwise qualified, so I believe there is no protection. Thank you. So I withdraw the suggestion. But I do want to put forward a public policy question, which is for these kids that, say, are excellent in one area and just horrible in another, why are we denying them a diploma? We are changing the course of their future education, perhaps unnecessarily, because I certainly know from my life experience, I was able to go on and get a undergraduate degree at a very nice private school without ever having taken math in high school. I don't recommend it, but I know that setting these standards that says you must be this capable across the board, that you are unreasonably denying asynchronous learners the opportunity to pursue their strengths.
Okay. Well,
thank you.
Any questions of Ms. Reed?
I'm formulating one, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
We're all formulating it. We just passed out the letter from Legislative Council on whether there's a violation of the constitutional 14th Amendment or No Child Left Behind, and the answer is no to both questions.
I think, Mr. Chair.
Senator Bonamici.
Ms. Reed, you heard Representative Gelser's testimony, and I'm sure that you understand and appreciate the reason why
Absolutely.
She brought the bill forward. So in light of that, what do you think would be an appropriate solution to the issue?
Mr. Chair, Senator Bonamici, thank you for the question. I think that what would be appropriate is that given, from my perspective, is that if there's to be a modified diploma, have it be at the parent's request, that this takes away the conflict of interest with the school system, the underfunded school system, from doing that which is easiest for the system versus doing that which is best for the child, because then for those students who really, whose families definitely want them to pursue something less than 24 credits, they have that opportunity. And I also believe because you have these 12 credits laid out that have no correlation with definite classes of disabilities, I think that you need to take the regular diploma and adjust that based on a child's individual needs, which would be through the IEP, such that a severely disabled child with a certain set of capabilities is not denied access to the things that that person can actually achieve.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Marcy Ingledo.
Good afternoon, Senator Hass and members of the committee. My name is Marcy Ingledew, and I'm currently the executive director for the Arc of Oregon, and more importantly, I'm the mother of a 17-year-old son that experiences developmental disabilities. If you're unfamiliar with the ARC, we are a statewide membership organization. We're a nonprofit organization that advocates for the rights of individuals with developmental disabilities and intellectual disabilities. For over 50 years, we were founded by parents, and we look at the needs of parents, whether their child is a young child up into adults, and we talk about being the organization that serves individuals from birth to death. The Arc of Oregon supports the passage of House Bill 2507 with the amendments. We feel the need that it is important to establish an extended diploma for students and the constituents that we serve. And because I'm very familiar with this, I was a member of a committee that looked to find ways to deal with the issues of diplomas for the kids that we serve statewide. Currently, my son was born in Grants Pass, Oregon, and attended school there up until he was a sophomore in high school. We worked hard to keep him fully included in the general education classroom and to have access to the general education curriculum. Our family has a goal for our son that's when he leaves the education school system, he'll have the knowledge and the education he needs to get out in the workforce and to work in a competitive employee job that not only that has been given to him because it's a slot, it's something that he has pursued and he wants to work in. And so in order to do that, our family knew long ago when we started researching what his needs were going to be and we ended up in the special education system, we knew in order for him to be to reach that goal of becoming a tax-paying citizen, he would need to have education, knowledge, and skills. And so we looked to the education of our son and felt that being in an education, a general education classroom was going to reach us to that goal. It hasn't been easy keeping him in a general education classroom, and what we want is more than just him sitting in a general education classroom. What we need for him is to access the general education curriculum. Unfortunately, whether it's funding, whether it's training, whether it's philosophy, you don't always get that unless you're an advocate for your son or daughter to attempt to write the goals in their IEP that gets them towards that goal. We continued to do that and found that when we went into high school in Grants Pass, they offered a variety of diplomas. Because he'd always been included, we were on track for what Grants Pass School District called a modified diploma. Last fall, when we moved to Salem and he started at West Salem High School, there was no such thing as a modified diploma. There was nothing for him except a certificate of attendance. We've worked hard for years and years and years to keep the standards and the levels up so that he can leave school with the knowledge that he's worked his hardest and he has met the benchmarks and the modifications and the grades so that he could reach some sort of recognition and accomplishment through a diploma. So it was very difficult when we moved to Salem and found out that the school district did not ever offer that. So originally we knew about the modified diploma. We were very much involved with the creation of the modified diploma. However, when it ended up and we finished with the modified diploma in Rule, it was apparent to me as a parent that, again, he was not going to reach those 24 credits. It was going to be too difficult, in addition to the fact that we were at a new school, and I spent many, many meetings the first fall when we were here with the school, with our IEP team, and them all saying to me, you know, we've never done it this way. We've never had a kid like Joey in a general education classroom. We don't know how to do it. And so we worked for a long time. And it's not that they didn't want to do it, and it's not that they didn't work hard, but that held up Joey's academic progress. And although he continues to be in a general education classroom, except for two periods of the day, he's not reaching the levels that we had hoped he had. We also knew that we had to then settle for a certificate of attendance, because in our school district, although we've worked hard to reach a modified diploma in a different school district, moving to Salem did not allow us to then reach those goals. So we're very excited with what Representative Gelser has put forward in this bill, knowing that we still think, because of the credits he's received at his previous high school and the work and the benchmarks we've put together as an IEP team here, we feel very confident that this is something that fits for what he can do, and that we can even maybe make that work, even though he's going to be a senior next year. He's very excited about being a senior. He's very excited. In fact, I wanted him to come here today to meet you. However, he has things to do after school, and he just couldn't fit you into his schedule. However,
we understand.
If we had more notice, he would have probably rearranged his schedule, but he is very busy, and he's looking forward to, because he's always been around kids with his non-disabled peers, he's looking forward to someday. Of course, he wants to go to college, because that's what he sees his brother doing, going, and I think he's just worried about living in the dorms and partying. He doesn't know how hard it is to go to college, but what he is looking forward to is getting a job someday. And the other benefit that we really feel that he has benefited from, as far as being included with his peers, is the fact that these kids know him. They're not afraid of him. And someday these kids are going to be the kids that are going to hire him for a job. And they're not going to be afraid to, because they know how hard he works and they know who he is. But he also will have that sense of accomplishment that he's got more than a certificate of attendance. He's got an extended diploma that he's had to meet benchmarks for, and he's had to work very hard for that, as well as the rest of his family that has supported him. I appreciate this opportunity to give testimony, and I would be happy to answer any questions you would have.
Thank you, Marcy. Did you want to weigh in on these amendments that are before us on this bill, or have you had a chance to see
them? I just saw them this morning as far as, and so I probably couldn't really address the amendments at this point, except for the fact that I was very concerned when the bill was first introduced with the modified diploma having the changes, and so my understanding is the amendments are addressing the modified diploma's changes, and then the extended diploma then is in line with what's been put forth.
Those would be the dash 5 amendments.
Yes.
Okay. Questions? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Senator Hass, and members of the committee.
I think that's all we have signed up to testify here. Representative Gelser, did you need any rebuttal, cleanup?
Not rebuttal, just clarification.
Cleanup batting.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm still Sarah Gelser from Corvallis. Just a couple of quick pieces. First of all, I think the issue of whether or not appropriate accommodations, modifications, best practices, research-based instruction is offered to all kids is an issue that we need to tackle. Certainly over in the House Education Committee, we've become deeply enmeshed in this issue as we've wrestled with the issues around the Oregon School for the Blind. My committee has asked that we work on special ed accountability issues in the interim. In particular, our committee is interested in looking at what you had called Senate Bill 652, and that talks about shifting the burden of proof for whether or not that adequate program is being offered to the district from the parents. And that's kind of aligned with what Ms. Reed was talking about, that issue that the school school district needs to show that. Secondly, wanted to clarify that the 12-credit diploma only applies to that extended diploma, which is that 1% of the students with the significant cognitive disabilities. That's the new part. The modified diploma is still a 24-credit diploma. So 24 standard diploma, 24 credits. Modified diploma, 24 credits. And extended diploma, 12 credits. On the issue of the financial aid, there's been a lot of discussion about that. And I've always been interested in it because I have a confession to make. I do not have a high school diploma. I also do not have a GED. I am a high school dropout that went to college after the 10th grade. And I did receive financial aid, but I have no diploma to speak of. And homeschool students go to college and they get financial aid and they don't have diplomas. So I think that we need to do some work on that, and I think that information is out there and we need to fix that. And I think the last piece is that question about whether or not it's appropriate to differentiate for different types of kids. And I am usually the very last person to say this because I am a hardcore inclusion, I would even use the word activist. But at the end of the day, some of these kids are different. When I send my 4 kids out the door in the morning, one of my kids is different. My 8-year-old gets up, she gets dressed, she brushes her teeth, she fixes herself breakfast. At bedtime, she puts her pajamas on and goes to bed. My 14-year-old needs me to help him get dressed, needs me to brush his teeth, needs me to shave him, needs me to fix his breakfast, needs me to do those things. I love them the same. They both have endless potential, but they're different. And so when we set expectations around our house, they're different. What we expect Maya to do for her chores is different than what we expect Sam to do for the chores. We expect them to both work hard. We set goals that make them have to stretch, and that causes them to stretch. And I think that that's the appropriate thing to do in public schools as well. So we're stretching all of our kids and rewarding them all when they reach and when they succeed.
Questions?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Gelser. It seems to me that there's a balancing act between what the school may judge from a professional perspective to be the appropriate course of action and what the parent wants and feels is the appropriate course of action. Does your amendment address how that's to be resolved in a way that, you know, hopefully is in the best interest of the student?
Mr. Chair, Senator Morse, I think that that issue is addressed in two ways. With the passage of this bill, we say to school districts that parents aren't crazy when they say they want their kids to have the opportunity to pursue these things and to make progress in this area. We're opening doors that are too often shut because, like Ms. Ingledew said, people have just said we've never really done it that way before. I think we've had the same experience with our son. Never had a kid in a literature class. Now they have 5, and it's working well for all of them. It usually takes that one kid to come along with the mom that's kind of pushy that starts to make the difference. In terms of the modified diploma and what the parent wants, that's addressed in the rule. The rule says that the school district will determine what team makes the decision about whether or not a student would pursue a modified diploma as opposed to a standard diploma. It says that in any case, the parent must be part of that team. The parent must be consulted and have a voice. In the case of a student that's enrolled in special education, that team will be the IEP team, in which the parent by law, not necessarily by practice, but the parent by law is an equal member and an equal decision-making member in that team. So I do think it's accommodated for in what's written. We do have work to do in terms of accountability and practice.
Okay, we very much appreciate your heartfelt testimony here.
Thank you.
Close public hearing on House Bill 2507. And we will open a public hearing on House Bill 2011. And I see Representative Dana, sorry, go ahead.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2011A requires the State Board of Higher Education to direct each state institution of higher education to waive tuition for any course audited by an Oregon resident who is 65 years of age under certain circumstances. There's a similar requirement for community college district boards. It permits the institutions and community colleges to develop rules to implement this.
and would first apply to courses offered in the 2010-2011 academic year.
Representative Dembrough.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Senators. Michael Dembrough, State Representative for House District 45. That's Northeast Portland to Park Rose. And it's a real pleasure for me to bring House Bill 2011 to you today, particularly because this speaks to the world that, my normal world, when I'm not here in this abnormal world. It also does a really good service, I think, to Oregonians who are over the age of 65. It allows them to be part of the world of education by auditing courses either at community college or at the university, as long as there's space, and it's an appropriate course. Instructors still have discretion so that if, for example, it's a laboratory course and it's not really a proper setting for an audit situation, then the instructor can choose not to let them in. But This is a practice that I think is already happening at most of the universities, just through policy, and at some of the community colleges, and at many not. Just speaking from my own experience, when I started teaching at Portland Community College in 1981, and we had a lot of seniors on campus. Actually, at that time, seniors could take any course for credit at no charge. And we had a lot on campus. I had a lot in my classes. And I can tell you, just speaking personally, it really enriched the campus atmosphere. Having a lot of seniors on campus, interacting in class with younger students, and I learned a lot from it. I know the other students did. And it was really important for the seniors who were there. Got them engaged, kept them, mentally active, creating, being part of social networks. And it also just gave them firsthand experience with higher education and the importance of it, cutting through some of the stereotypes about it. And it, frankly, created a lot of supporters for community colleges just because people had that firsthand experience with them. As we went through budgetary tough times, that free tuition became half tuition, and then at some point they had to pay full tuition. And the numbers really went down, and I think the campuses became lesser places as a result. And I'm sure that, the lives of senior Oregonians became lesser as a result. So this bill is an effort to turn that around. It has the support of the colleges and OUS, I would really urge you to support it. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Question, Senator Metzger.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative. I just have a question. I don't disagree with anything you've said, but I wonder. I think all that enrichness of folks would be there for any of our citizens, regardless of any chronological age they have achieved. I mean, if it's terms of money, I'm seeing crass, but as we're dealing with this with the budget, where we're giving millionaire seniors credits that they don't really need, and poor seniors we're not able to fund. And I'm just seeing that since this age group, unlike the 60s, is the richest of Americans by group, why tuition-free if there's a seat available? I don't oppose that, but what about the poor young person who is not seeking college credit but wants to enrich themselves and they can't afford to go to college? Why couldn't they have a free seat if it's available? I'm just thinking, audited by any Oregon resident based on that same criteria.
Mr. Chair and Senator Metzger, I think you make a fair point, and I certainly would be supportive of free auditing for anyone. But I think that would just be very difficult to do. And I think that in a sense, our seniors have earned this right to audit, to have that experience. the younger person, you know, I would think is going to be more likely to earn college credit, get another degree, you know, is thinking of a career in a way that a senior Oregonian probably is not.
Further questions? Thank you. Senator Morris.
Thank you. And following along the lines of Senator Metzger, is there any way to understand what the cost is of providing this benefit?
Mr. Chair, Senator Morris, my understanding is that there is no, you know, there's no appreciable cost to doing this. These are students who would otherwise, or individuals who would otherwise not be coming onto campus. These are, we do have courses that are, you know, community education courses, as they're called, they're personal enrichment courses, and those would not be covered by this. These are, and because those are courses that are being offered on a self-sustaining kind of basis, where it really is essential that people be paying fees for them. These are the regular courses that would be going on anyway. These individuals would most likely not be attending if they had to pay for it. It's very, very infrequent that an individual would audit a course and pay full tuition. So, and I think that was the legislative fiscal analysis would be that would be the case.
Representative, a lot of these courses at community colleges are you know, hobby courses, mm-hmm. you know, the proverbial basket weaving or crafts. Are they included in this bill?
Senator Hess, I believe they are not. It would just be for the regular college courses,
and
not the community education.
And the lower division.
Lower division, right?
And the rules would be developed that I'm assuming. I mean, you can't just even to some students. Some of those courses require some admission. You have to have the first math class to take Math 102, for example, and those kinds of things would apply to these seniors.
Senator Hess, I believe so. I don't know. And, of course, auditors are not necessarily participating actively in the course. And so there, I think it would be up to the individual instructor.
Okay. Okay, if there are no further questions, thank you, Representative.
Thank you.
We'll call up Lisa Pinheiro and Joe Johnson.
Senator Hass and members of the committee, my name is Joe Johnson. I'm with the Oregon Community College Association, and I'm here to testify in favor of House Bill 211. To answer some of the questions that have been raised, in some of our courses, we do require fees. This does not waive fees where they are required. It is the institution that establishes eligibility, so if a person is taking French 2 or whatever, they must meet the requirements of that class. So those issues have been addressed. This bill has been worked very carefully between the institutions, and we're pleased to be able to support it and to say that we think it will minimize costs because it will involve only the registration activity, and we will have these seats available because of their audit basis. And so we think it's good public policy, and that the legislature can reap some reward in the sense of people feeling that their investment in their tax dollars, that they're getting something out of them, and it would be additional support for higher education in this state. So thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. For the record, Lisa Pinheiro with the Oregon University System. We're happy to be here as well to support House Bill 2011. As indicated when this bill was on the House committee, the university system has been offering this benefit to senior citizens since 1982 academic year, and that's just as far back as I went. I believe that it goes back even further. We appreciated the speaker's flexibility in letting us amend the bill to give us a little bit more flexibility to charged fees that are incidental to the course, particularly lab fees, for example, or material fees, and to give us the opportunity to provide this benefit to for all courses. The original bill and the original draft of the bill limited it to undergraduate, and that would have been a nightmare for our registrars to have to figure out and sift through. So we're pleased with the Engross bill and would encourage you to support it as well. And I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Questions? Senator Morse?
No, I'm good, thank you.
Okay, and you can just verify, Joe, that this does not apply, this isn't a senior who signs up for, gardening?
I can absolutely verify that. Yes, that is the correct.
Yeah. I just didn't, that could be the rules, or is that...
That would be in the rules of the institution, but the rules of the institution, we would not do that because that would destroy our fee structure of our self-support classes.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. No further questions. I'm going to close public hearing on House Bill 2011, and I will open up a work session on House Bill 2011.
Mr. Chair, I move that House Bill 2011A engrossed to be reported out of committee with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Morse moves that House Bill 2011 engrossed be reported out of committee with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Seeing none, is there objection? Seeing none, the measure passes to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and I will carry it. I will close a work session on House Bill 2011 and open up a public hearing on House Bill 2108.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2108 deals with career schools, and it requires that those types of schools must meet specified requirements, and that students in the career schools are eligible for the tuition protection fund monies. It clarifies the types of schools that are subject to these regulations. And it allows the superintendent of public instruction to require a criminal records check of any career school agents who have contact with persons under 18 years of age. That's kind of a brief overview, Senator, Mr. Chair.
Okay. And we have the Department of Education standing by to go through this. And Morgan Allen.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Morgan Allen with the Department of Education. Appreciate the opportunity to talk to you today about House Bill 2108. one of the little known in a lot of sectors, quarters of the department, is that we actually license private career schools. And private career schools are it's a ever-growing and expanding area of post-secondary education. But just to kind of give you an example of the types of schools we license and regulate, so cosmetology schools, healthcare, real estate schools, and we also have tattoo schools, truck driving schools, and cooking schools. So it's a very broad field. There are about 300 of these schools in Oregon licensed by the department. And I think one clarification for the committee, these schools that are licensed by the department, they don't offer associate degrees or bachelor degrees. Instead, what they really are is they offer very specific training in a field that usually requires that a student attain a license or some sort of certification in a specialized field of work. So just to give you a little bit of background to what we're talking about, and House Bill 2108 actually does two things. We're trying to put some clarification in statute. When some private career schools also decide to offer AA or bachelor's degrees, their programs have to be approved by the Oregon Student Assistance Commission Office of Degree Authorization. So if any of you have ever talked to Alan Contreras, that's his office down in Eugene. And once OSAC begins the process of reviewing all of the other non-degree programs, they have to go through and check all those out. But right now, there's this sort of limbo period between the time they're a licensed career school with the department and the time that all of their degree track programs have been approved by the Oregon Student Assistance Commission. So what we're trying to do with House Bill 2108 is make it clear that until OSAC has finished their review and approved all the courses and program, both those non-degree courses and degree courses, that the school has to still be continued to be licensed as a private career school if it's going to keep offering those non-degree programs. And we're really doing that for two reasons. The first reason is It allows students to continue to be eligible for the tuition protection fund. So if during that transition there's really some sort of bad actor school, which happens sometimes, unfortunately, it'll still protect those students. And the second reason, it ensures that there's clear lines of authority over the program during this transition phase from private to career school licensed with the department to a school that offers academic degrees that is regulated by Mr. Contreras' shop at the Oregon Student Assistance Commission. So that's the first part of the bill. The second part of the bill, actually, we came up with this idea. Senator Cruz was part of, and the committee administrator were part of, a lengthy group of meetings that have produced several bills this session around protection of students, fingerprinting, making sure our students are safe in schools. And as part of that process, we looked at some of the other things that we do at the department and realized that there are actually not an insignificant number of private career schools that enroll students under the age of 18. So a lot of our cosmetology schools, for example, will have minor students taking courses in cosmetology skills. So what the second half of the bill does really does two things. It's really intended to give the department some more authority to weed out bad actors. Unfortunately, there have been a few high-profile cases. If any of you know Debbie Kresge in Speaker Hunt's office, she happened to work at one of those and can tell you about that. But the vast majority of our schools do a good job, and they're reputable businesses. And we need to make sure that those reputable businesses are not tarnished by the bad actions of a few schools here in our state or in other states. So with House Bill 2108, we'll be able to have a little bit more authority to look into the history of the schools. Specifically, the bill would allow us to not issue a license if there's been conduct that may have caused probation, suspension, or revocation of a past private career school license. So sometimes these bad actors will go from state to state, or their school will get shut down or closed down, and they'll try to reopen. If we have evidence that they haven't complied with private career schools and statutes in Oregon, or if we find that in other states that their schools, they've been led to criminal charges or other malfeasance. So again, it's not something that we like to talk about because, again, our private career school folks are some of the nicest folks you'll ever meet, and they do a really good job helping fill a need for a lot of students that may not need to go on to a four-year college or a community college and can get specialized training and go in and get high-paying jobs that require a pretty significant skill set right away. So they do. Most of them are doing a good job. The second part of the bill would give us authority for those schools like cosmetology schools that enroll minor children. We'd be allowed to do fingerprint background checks on the people that work at those schools and their agents and owners and operators. And we think this is just something that would ensure that those minor students would be protected, just like they would if they were enrolled at a community college or a public school, that they would have that same level of protection. So there's no opposition to the bill. The industry have been some of the strongest champions for self-regulation and have really stepped up. Then they support this bill, and our cosmetology schools support the bill. And I believe the Northwest Career Colleges Federation and our own advisory council are supportive of these changes. So we'd appreciate if you would move this along to the floor, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Senator Cruz. Yeah, Morgan, just a kind of a related question. Is there any sort of communication network between state departments of ed as far as there's a school that you have deemed bad actors and you've revoked? Is that information available to other states? I mean, is there a network for that sort of thing currently?
Mr. Chair, Senator Cruz, I don't know the answer to that, but I'll check on that for you. My understanding is, you know, I think our private career schools here, we have an advisory council that meets regularly that has representatives from the schools and the Northwest Career Colleges Federation, and the cosmetology schools have their own representation. But my impression is that the industry is very active in making sure that this remains a reputable area, because there have been a few high-profile instances in Oregon and other states with sort of bad actors and fly-by-night operations, and my impression is that everyone kind of knows who these folks are. You know, they do business as, you know, they change their business names and things like that. So, but I can check and see if there is sort of a, for lack of a better term, kind of a national registry. But I do know our folks talk to folks in other states when people come here from out of state to open up these schools or come from other places.
questions.
Okay, thank you. And I don't see anyone else signed up to testify. I know Private Schools Association, Ms. McDonald, is here, but has signed off on this bill and doesn't need to testify. So I will close the public hearing on House Bill 2108 and open up a work session on House Bill 2108.
Mr. Chair, I move that House Bill 2108A, engrossed measure, be reported out of committee with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Morris moves that House Bill 2108A, engrossed, be reported out of committee with due pass recommendation. Is there discussion? Is there objection? Seeing none, the motion carries. And we are over to Senator Cruz. You worked on this. Would you like to carry?
Sure.
Okay.
He said enthusiastic.
He's interested in the tattoo school for some reason. And seeing no other business before us, we are adjourned.